Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf Gimel B'Chodesh Teves, Parashas Va'era, Taf Shin Ayin Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 3 January 2016, webcasting from the last legal Jew-killing ground on Earth. It's really quite amazing, the perdurability, basically the permanence of the need, and no less important justification for Jew-killing, since last Thursday, 3 more Jews have been murdered by, judging by the Associated Press, the victims of the Jews. There was that surprise attack on a restaurant in Tel Aviv on Friday. 2 dead, 8 wounded. Later, a cab driver was found murdered, and the police think there may be a connection. And because the murderer on Dizengoff, that's Tel Aviv's mini Champs-Élysées, escaped and is still on the run as of this evening, there is a fear that he ran to an accomplice a few streets away, jumped into a car, and they sped off. That would be a new MO, new modus operandi. But of course, the top story here was the indictment this morning of 4 young Jewish males. One directly for the triple murder in Douma. The others for other crimes against the Palestinians. To read the Associated Press story on these indictments was to read about the poor, poor Palestinian victimization by Al-Yehud. The AP reported that Prime Minister Netanyahu pledged zero tolerance for such behavior, and the crime of arson was condemned across the Israeli political spectrum. But that was the end of the reportage on Israel. The rest featured the disaffection among the ancient ones, even though the indictment and the naming of suspects had finally come through. Quote, critics have said that similar, albeit not deadly, attacks have festered for years with little action by the government. And for months, Palestinians have watched angrily as the case remained unsolved, intensifying a feeling of skewed justice in the occupied territory where suspected Palestinian militants are prosecuted under a separate system of military law that gives them few rights. The arson also touched on Palestinian fears of extremist Jewish settlers who have attacked Palestinian property with impunity. Palestinian attacks against Israeli civilians and soldiers over the past 3.5 months have killed 21 Israelis, mostly stabbings, shooting, and car ramming attacks. But during that time, 131 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli fire, 90 of them identified as assailants. The rest died in clashes with security forces. Israel says the violence is being fanned by a Palestinian campaign of incitement. The Palestinians say it is rooted in nearly 5 decades of Israeli occupation, close quote. And what I ask was the reason for murdering Jews 6 decades ago, and 7 decades ago, and 8 decades ago, etc. Notice, too, the implicit moral equivalence of the arithmetic, or rather, the disproportionate feature of it. 21 dead Jews versus 131 dead Arabians. And people are upset by that. In the Six-Day War, around 800 Israeli soldiers lost their lives, versus possibly as many as 20,000 Arabians. But in that generation, nobody complained about the disproportionate number of casualties, and that's because in 1967 there was no ancient Palestinian nation whose entire country had been stolen from them by the Zionists. In this AP piece, the anonymous correspondent interviewed the brother of the father who died in the Douma arson, who said the Israeli government is not serious about pursuing the killers. And I ask, what is Israel to do with a people like this who think this way and are so utterly disconnected from reality? Israel has been turning itself inside out since last July 31st to find the murderers. And here's this Arab saying Israel's not serious. As if the Israeli government doesn't really care because it smiles on burning Arabs to death. But the real irritant in this reportage comes less from the Arab than the AP correspondent himself, who then goes on to state, quote, Jewish extremists have for years vandalized or set fire to Palestinian property, as well as mosques, churches, the offices of dovish Israeli groups, and even Israel's military bases. The so-called price tag attacks seem to exact a cost for Israelis, since they favor the Palestinians. Yeah, Jewish extremists. These are not extremists. They are psychologically a handful of painfully immature and seemingly traumatized boys, in extreme, in their adolescent rebellion against authority. Indeed, the real target of the so-called price tag attacks are not the Palestinians, but the IDF and the State of Israel, the authorities. These are boys imprisoned in an extreme case of adolescent rebellion. Their target is not the Arabs, but the State of Israel, who in their fantasy life is illegitimate and they know better than the adults and want to create a real Jewish state. Ala Meir Kahana and his dream. I remember when Rabbi Kahana made Aliyah, he said he was going to drive Israelis crazy. And by that he meant he was going to shake them up and out of their un-Jewish attitudes and miserable, cowardly handling of the Arabs. And I say, if you really love Israel, you don't come here wanting to make everybody crazy. As for today's indictments, the prime suspect responsible for the firebombing has been identified and indicted. Amram Ben Uliel, 21 years old, who has a record of vandalizing Arab property and setting fires. He was living on a hilltop nearby. He has a record of lighting fires. Complicating the story was a Haaretz piece on Friday. Although the other MSM here seems not to have run with it, which is peculiar, and that was the charge that torture was used, authorized by the Attorney General Yehuda Weinstein, who did not inform the Prime Minister of authorizing the GSS to use extraordinary measures, as they're called. In effect, Netanyahu, Bennett, and Yalon were lied to when they were told no terror was used. The whole issue still remains a mystery. It was reported today, via this indictment of Ben Uliel, that he had confessed, but of course his family says he was tortured. And if so, the confession is therefore inadmissible, it's meaningless. On one score, though, the truth has come out. What splattered the whole story over the MSM here last week was that video of celebrants at a wedding dancing with an Army-issue M16. Their Kahanaite lawyer, Itamar Ben-Gvir, said it was only a toy, not the real McCoy. But the truth was discovered by the IDF that was able to identify the soldiers in attendance and which soldier had been issued that weapon. And he's in the clink now, in the brig, for the next 3 weeks, for allowing this to happen. For those who don't know, tiny Israel allows many of its standing army troops to go home for the weekend for Shabbos. And when they travel, they wear, slung around their shoulders, their weapon. And they have orders never to be separated from it. That means that when they enter the synagogue on Shabbos Eve, the weapon is with them. When they sit down at the dinner table, it lies across their lap as they eat and sing and bless. For that inexcusable, irresponsible act of allowing his weapon to be used as it was, Itamar Ben-Gvir was proven a liar or an incompetent. It was a real weapon, and that guy is now in the clink. Separately on Friday, two soldiers from the same combat unit were disciplined in a completely separate case. One of them was removed altogether from the brigade that he had volunteered for, and the other one was assigned to administrative duty because they had abused some Palestinian detainees. What's going on here? Israel's fanaticism about the proper behavior of soldiers in all situations is as old as the book of Joshua. When he leads the children of Israel over Jordan into today's West Bank, into Jericho, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, the old Negro spiritual said. And at that time of the invasion of Jericho, a member of the tribe of Judah countermanded, so to speak, the orders of Joshua, the national leader after the passing of Moshe, not to take any booty from the defeated Canaanites in Jericho. It was one soldier among all of them who did that. And the result was God's anger. God demands perfection from his chosen people. As a result, in their next battle with the people of Ai, they lost. 36 of them died. When Joshua appealed to Hashem to tell him what had happened, what he had done wrong, God answered that Israel had sinned by looting when ordered not to. Israel had sinned. Joshua then assembled all 12 tribes, and lots were cast to find the guilty party. The tribe of Judah was singled out, and Joshua passed through it, to investigate, checking family by family, and he came to Achan, who confessed he had stolen one garment and some gold and silver. The punishment, he and his family were stoned to death, and their remains burnt. A huge mound of stones was raised over them to remain for future generations to remember their story. And then in the next battle against the people of Ai, the children of Israel won.
Leman achai, achai v're'ai, Adab hana, shalom bach. Leman beit, Hashem Elokeinu, v'akshatov lach. Leman achai, achai v're'ai, Adab hana, shalom bach.
So it remains to be seen how this tale will play itself out. Was young Ben Uliel tortured or not? Was he framed? And what of the report of Yehuda Weinstein authorizing physical abuse and not telling the PN? In any case, it would not be the first time this character has thumbed his nose at the People's Choice. Not that he is solely responsible for his wretched behavior. I mean, the temptation to do what he damn well pleases is built into the office. Unlike a normal democracy in which an attorney general serves at the pleasure and on behalf of the people's elected government, here it is a separate office that in practice, certainly his practice, is adversarial to the prime minister, dictating what he may or may not do. It's another feature of Israel's crummy political engineering. Like denying the electorate the power to vote for individual Knesset members, only the party, only for the clique, that is the party leadership. And of course, the electorate likewise has no power to vote out of office, a failed MK. Unheard of in Israeli life is the people voting out an incompetent and or a corrupt representative. So last week, yours truly had no choice but to support the statements of Netanyahu, Bennett, Yalon, Shaked, who have earned my trust, and now the possibility arises they were lied to by this criminal defense attorney from Tel Aviv with a known record of hostility to the Jewish ideology, a.k.a. religion, and those of us who live in Judea and Samaria. It remains to be seen how this story will play out on all these strands that go into it. But what is clearer, at least to yours truly, is the identity of these known Hilltop Boys. And one source for the truth was a fine piece in Makor Rishon on Friday, Israel's best newspaper, an anonymous tale by a former Hilltop Boy himself that confirms suspicions. They are a tiny handful of troubled young men, largely dropouts from the mainstream settler yeshivas who, contrary to the historical left, are not enthralled to extremist settler rabbis for the simple reason that, as ornery as some of those may be, in their hostility to the enlightened and to the elite who run this country, they remain religious Zionists, and they don't preach the destruction of Israel, as these teenage rebels want. Indeed, as it's so common among teenagers, they sneer at their elders, their predecessors, the leaders of the settlement movement who pressed the labor government in the 1970s to begin settling the land that had been taken in 1967. For the first decade after that war, there was almost no building of settlements, with the exception of the few in Gush Etzion that had been on their feet before 1948 and were destroyed, wiped out, and the people in them massacred. In the minds of today's teenage rebels, the entirety of the national religious camp is illegitimate. So these are not extremists within that camp, but deserters from it, living really a fantasy world, in a fantasy world of wanting to destroy Israel so that King Messiah would replace it. They, hence the graffiti on that burnt-out home, they constitute a microscopic percentage of settler youth who in their majority are bent on service in the IDF and are increasingly constituting the next generation of officers. In other words, as Achan was the only one among the 12 tribes to disobey the order to take no booty, as Avraham himself took no booty during his hostage rescue mission to Damascus, so today a handful of these off-the-rails teenagers are held up as representatives of the entire state of Israel by the left. In that AP report, the settlers are endlessly destroying ancient Palestinian property and endlessly vandalizing mosques and churches, when the reality is not that at all. Indeed, of the recent acts of vandalism, for example, the church on the Sea of Galilee, the Church of Fishes and Loaves, it seems the principal perpetrator was this very same Ben Uliel. And in a similar case of arson on Mount Zion against the Church of the Last Supper, this was also his doing, they think, and a handful of Confederates. What is instructive in this case is just how fanatical we are as a people in not tolerating the kinds of terrorist abominations that are daily fare among the Arabs. That is one reason why several hundred IDF reservists recently came together to scorn the Breaking the Silence slanderers, who are rebels against Israel no less than these Hilltop Boys. In a way, the two camps on the surface are poles apart, but underneath they're birds of a feather, both claiming the state of Israel is illegitimate, a criminal enterprise, one way or the other. And these two are not alone in Judea and Samaria, for on the Arab side, no less, on the same turf, a struggle never ends between the internationally recognized Palestinian Authority and its rebels, Hamas. Same thing. As the Hilltop Boys and the Breaking the Silence traitors want to destroy the government and really the culture of the State of Israel, so the PA is constantly at war with Hamas. That, like the Hilltop Boys, finds the ruling group insufficiently religious. On Friday, J-Post's Herb Kanon and Khaled Abu Toam reported that Hamas and other Arab factions in Yosh have, quote, decided to resume suicide attacks against Israel, leastwise according to a newspaper in Lebanon, Al-Akhbar, which means, I think, the news, which represents the Hezbollah cult. And according to that source, quote, Hamas is seeking to undermine the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank through the participation of a large number of Fatah activists in the current wave of terrorism against Israel, close quote. In other words, and not for the first time, nominal rivals are collaborating with one another. And that commonly happens when the ruling elite, in this case Fatah, is not aggressive enough against Al-Yahud and a percentage of its subalterns, its loyalists, are itching to do kill but feel frustrated because the elite won't let them. The elite is not aggressive enough, so they're working with Hamas. According to Kanon and Abu Toam, quote, Hamas's goals in inflaming the West Bank with renewed suicide bombings is twofold, to kill Jews and to destabilize the PA. It seems Hamas has wanted for some time to resume its campaign of suicide bombings, but has been stymied by Israel and, reading between the lines here, with the help of the PA. In any case, in my book, I cover more than one terrorist atrocity over the decades whose purpose was less about bleeding Jews in Israel than in competing with other terror cells for prestige and own. They killed Jews to work out their own rivalries. What a people these Arabs are. What enemies of civilization these barbarians are.
Thank you.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, the Arabs, like the handful of teenage hilltop rebels, these dropouts from the mainstream community of national religious youth, are afflicted with endless rebellion against authority, and especially when it's common knowledge that the PA works with Israel against Hamas and betrays them to Al-Yahud. Think of the Hollywood classic The Godfather, which is very much about gang wars and betrayal between families. Arab culture is like that. Arab culture is as old as the Torah. These sons of Ishmael, that wild ass of an undomesticated jackass, who lives in the wilderness as the hilltop boys float from one cluster of tents and rickety caravans to the other. A friend and subscriber in California, John, was kind enough to pass along something from the Breitbart site concerning St. Thomas Aquinas, the Catholic theologian who lived in the 13th century during the last generations of the Crusades. Aquinas said Islam appealed to ignorant, brutish, carnal men and was spread by not by the power of its arguments or divine grace, but by the power of the sword. Aquinas said Christianity spread its faith via widespread belief in the miracles of Jesus versus Islam, which spread through sensual pleasures and the violence of the sword. Sound familiar? 72 virgins and forcible conversion of infidels via homicidal violence. Muhammad, Aquinas wrote, quote, seduced the people by promises of carnal pleasure, to which the concupiscence of the flesh goads us. His teaching also contained precepts that were in conformity with his promises, and he gave free rein to carnal pleasure. And this appealed to a certain type of person of limited virtue and wisdom. He called Muhammad's first devotees brutal men and desert wanderers, utterly ignorant of all divine teaching. And his violent method of propagating the faith was typical of evil men. And I recommend to my friend John and to all of you to check out what Maimonides had to say about Muhammad and Islam. He lived a generation before Aquinas. You'll find what he had to say in his Guide to the Perplexed and in his Epistle on Apostasy and his Epistle to Yemen. He also had the advantage over Aquinas of living among Muslims. Arabic was his mother tongue. He wrote in Arabic, albeit using the Hebrew alphabet, like Yiddish in Ashkenaz. Maimonides lived all his life among Muslims and had more than once to run for his life from them. And in Epistle to Yemen, he calls Muhammad a moron and a madman.
חמים עלינו התגלגלי ולפני קונך תחינתנו הפילי ובאדמך רחמים שאלי כי כל לבב דבי וכל ראש לחולי מידת הרחמים עלינו התגלגלי ולפני קונך תחינתנו הפילי אדמך רחמים שאלי כי כל לבב דבי וכל ראש לחולי מבחינתנו הפילי אדמך רחמים שאלי ככל לבב דווי ובכל ראש לחולי
Okay, that's it for this first night of the Civilian Universal New Year. I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.